Dirt and Sprague.
I really do believe they're either going to live up to the hype or they're going to have a very mediocre season.
Starting your day with a big cup of dirt.
No, I'm not a bro.
And a little splash of Sprague.
Peekaboo.
Dirt and Sprague on the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour 2, 7:01 in the beautiful Rose City. Good morning. Welcome in to the rain and everybody hanging out with us on this beautiful Wednesday. A lot to get to in the second hour of the radio program. Want to give you a quick update before we jump into the cafe. The Barstool dude that you brought up yesterday.
Oh, yeah, the punishments, yeah, for Ohio State losing.
I guess Dan Lanning caught wind of this and added a caveat to his Oregon-Ohio State bet.
Oh, what is the caveat that was added?
He has to face paint the Mike Tyson tattoo on his face until he and it has to stay on there until he ends up eating all the peeps.
All right. I appreciate the effort.
It'd be cooler if it was a real tattoo.
It would be a little bit more on stake if your team's down in
the
fourth quarter.
If you're saying your team is 12-0 and you're this confident, you should have to get like a mini version of the Mike Tyson face tattoo.
I dreaded when we did those Civil War bets, knowing what some of the punishments were going to be watching those games of how this is all going to... Wait, I got to go walk around in a cheerleader outfit now around the office and say hi to everybody? This is going to be a disaster.
We got a lot to get to here in hour number two, but let's open up Cafe de Dirt and Sprague. Good morning. Welcome into the cafe.
Hello.
Breakfast special today. It's a full menu as usual, but it's Celebrity Week. And today we're doing the JFK, the President of the United States who was assassinated. Quite enjoyed before he died. A soft boiled egg, crispy bacon, fresh orange juice, toast with butter and orange marmalade, and coffee with hot milk.
Ooh, not enough food, but it's okay. Not enough food. I need more food than that. That's not filling my hole.
It's almost a lot of liquid, isn't it?
It's too much liquid.
OJ and coffee.
I don't need an OJ. What do you go when you go
That's
breakfast?
That's a lot of acid in the stomach.
I go one direction or the other. I'm either in a juice mood because I got a good night's sleep and I don't necessarily need caffeine and I try and limit my caffeine, or you're running a little ragged and you need a cup of coffee. I don't ever go both.
You go days where your sleep's good enough and you don't partake?
I try to, yeah.
Oh,
I try, especially on the weekends, I try and not have any sort of caffeine. It's a policy of mine. It doesn't, I mean, it's probably 20% of the time that it actually happens.
Good for you.
Because you hit a lull at like 11 a.m. and you're like, all right, I need something.
There's a guy on
Instagram
who does presidential day, like a day in the life of a president and the meals they reportedly ate, like consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they mix it up. But like he goes through all of them, the ones from like the 1800s, the early 1900s. And it's some of those meals. You're just like, oh, my God. God, that's what they ate?
That's what you're eating. Trumpy Poo just eats burgers all day. He's just a big
McDonald's guy.
Mickey D's.
You know, the only thing me and him have in common, Diet Coke boys.
That's it. Big Diet Coke guy.
Big Diet Coke
guy. Get those fridge cigs. I'll make you happy, man.
A lot to get to in the cafe, Day Dirt and Sprague, as we open it up. Let's see. Where do I want to start? You know what? Let's start with some good news. Last night, for some fans locally.
Another 1-2. Fly ball, corked out to center field. It's flying away. It's a home run. Light tower power inside Fenway Park. Lázaro Montes with an absolute missile. Welcome to the show.
There's Aaron Goldsmith, Mariner TV. Lázaro Montes makes his MLB debut, and he goes yard against Boston. And they end up winning this one, snapping their 5-game losing streak.
In Boston. That's all I can think about now.
They're 5 out in the AL West.
5
and
out?
They're 9 games under 500.
Still got a puncher's chance, man.
5 out is, I mean, that's not close. That's
no, it's not close.
Out.
But there's also...
They need all those teams to fall in their face, which I would argue they have all year anyway.
They're probably done. The fork's not stuck in them yet, but the fork's on the outside of the skin looking in.
Something I'd like to talk about today that was announced... We have a new owner in Major League Baseball.
We do.
The Padres just introduced their new ownership group. The Angels were sold yesterday to a guy who now owns what feels like 20 professional teams, mostly in America, but one EPL team. We have Stan Kroenke buying the LA Angels from Artie Moreno, who was truly one of the worst sports owners to ever exist. Here's Mike Trout.
Order up!
Yeah, I mean, it's just... I think, you know, I haven't talked to Artie at all, but I think seeing the reaction from the fans and some of the guys and just the whole vibe, I think it was you needed for a fresh start. I think the biggest thing is, you know, getting that feeling of, you know, getting that winning culture back and having that vibe in the clubhouse.
I'd argue, Mike, you've never existed with the Angels with the winning culture, but that's fine. Get it back. Stan Kroenke going to own the LA Angels.
Yeah, Swag gave us a stat before the show that blew my mind, that they have not had a winning record since 2015.
It's 2026.
It's 11 years ago,
winding
man.
Winding down into 2027.
They are 53-86 this year. For anybody who has paid any attention to them, they've been to one postseason since 2009. In the last 16 years, they've been to the playoffs once. They have not won a playoff game since 2009. I mean, you're just talking an inept franchise. Maybe Kroenke will fix that. He'll also go down as like, why? Why did you resign there, man? What were you thinking?
Order up! It's the stupidest shit I've ever heard. Your entire life, I know I'll catch crap for this, but your entire life you fight to get up to the NFL. Okay, but now we're going to go back. Okay, that makes a lot of freaking sense.
There's Chris Ballard. I don't know if he's the greatest GM, but, dude, I enjoy his personality on the idea that NFL guys are leaving to go back to college.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous in all sports. It shouldn't be allowed to happen, but we have no rules in place, and so all you need is a judge in your campus and your town to say, go ahead, buddy, you can come back and play college football.
Yeah, I think I'll always have a chip on my shoulder. You know, the way that last season ended, you know, wasn't happy with it. Haven't been happy with any of the seasons the way they've ended. So, got to continue to find ways to keep getting better, keep pushing ourselves, and, you know, just keep grinding away and keep knocking at the door.
There's Bills quarterback Josh Allen on the pressure he is facing going into the year. New coach, coming up short in the playoffs a couple years in a row now.
Yep.
And Buffalo is just one of those heartbreak cities that's looking to get past the heartbreak with a championship.
Yeah.
But that was him yesterday at a press conference talking about the pressure he faces.
I mean, we heard from Burrow, was that a week or two ago, where he talked about, I'm tired of saying next year is the year. And Buffalo has certainly been more consistently good than Cincinnati has been. But I understand the feeling, man. Like, Josh Allen's 30 years old now. Now, we've seen quarterbacks be able to last. Brady's obviously the prime example. Stafford's in his upper 30s, pushing 40. Like, we've seen people be able to do it for a long time, but it's never a guarantee that you will stay at that high of a level for that long. You never know what injuries come up. And so, I mean, I imagine your clock's ticking. You're 30 years old. You haven't been to a Super Bowl yet. You've been close. You've been knocking on the door forever. It just adds to the pressure every time you get to the postseason and you have one of those games to feel like you have to capitalize, because you never know if you're going to get back to that point.
Order up!
I take it back to going and playing in the playoffs and just how exciting that moment was. And I'm just going to, you know, really embrace the moment for a little bit, because, you know, you're not going to get many opportunities to play in Tiger Stadium at night on game day. So it's going to be special, you know, playing with these fans and this crowd, this environment. You definitely have to soak it in and embrace the moment and the blessing that, you know, God has given you to be in this situation. And then you got to relock in and focus up. So I'll probably take a few minutes, you know, whether it's on the run out, pregame, just soaking it all in and embracing the moment, and then getting back to, you know, square one and focusing on the play at hand.
There's Portland's very own Sam Levitt, new quarterback at LSU, making his home and debut with the LSU Tigers this weekend against Clemson. One of my favorite Sam Levitt things so far at LSU has been him openly saying, I grew up in Oregon. I didn't know Louisiana was a state. Usually it's reversed on us. Usually it's like Oregon. Yeah. I didn't know what Oregon was.
You guys got the Oregon Trail out there, right?
But I was listening to a thing yesterday from Tom Luganville. Is it Luganville?
Yes, it is.
It is
Tom,
right?
Luganville, yes.
I really enjoy him. And he was talking about Sam Levitt. Says, they love his Favre-like nature as a gunslinger. They're really hoping the turnovers don't show themselves. Yeah. They're a little worried about that with him going into the season.
I saw from Marty Smith this morning that LSU football officials have confirmed that Saturday's season-opening home game against Clemson is the most media-slash-celebrity-credentialed game in the history of Tiger Stadium.
Really?
So all of the game of the centuries,
that's the game
all
of the games.
Huh? They've had some incredible games at LSU over the years. This is number one on the big board. It's their 102nd season in Tiger Stadium. A little bit of expectations on the shoulder. We'll see how they go.
Order up.
I would say so. I think this is just a confident group, and I think the edge comes from knowing that we have the confidence, but people don't really have confidence in us. And that just makes me excited. So, you know, every single time we come in here, from the strength staff to the equipment staff to the, you know, the head coach, like, people just have a different edge about them, a different excitement, a different level of confidence. And it's really cool to see.
You may not recognize that voice. That's the voice of the new Clemson quarterback, Chris Vezina, who has transferred around a little bit, but he was announced as the starter. Doesn't have a lot of starter experience, but he is older as Clemson gets ready to go to LSU. They're double-digit underdogs, and to his point, almost nobody's giving him a chance to win.
Now, I believe that he has been at Clemson the entire time.
Oh, I thought he was a transfer.
I think he's one of those guys who is like
waiting. But he's only started one
game. He's barely played.
Yeah.
He's one of these rare breeds of like a guy who's kind of hung around a lot.
Well, then my mistake. I know his starting experience is not good. I saw him and Levitt comped yesterday on television.
Yeah,
on
I'm trying to confirm. Yeah, so he got there in 2023.
Okay.
So I think he committed out of high school. But to your point, in his career, he has attempted 100 passes in his career for 500 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 pick. So Klubnik was the guy forever. He did the Ty Simpson thing where you just wait for the other guy. Wasn't even a guarantee he was going to win the job. They brought in another highly touted kid. They chose the guy with some veteran experience, if you will, to make that first start on the road. Very interesting for Clemson this year. 2 years ago, nobody really gave him a chance. We all kind of counted them out. They ended up in the college football playoff. Last year, we all picked them to win the national championship, and they fell out of the top 10 in the rankings altogether. So maybe this is a year where they surprise some people.
Just the playmaking ability, I don't think, gets talked about enough. You know, when we need him on crucial downs, you know, third downs, like you see here, him being able to use his legs, you know, when he needs to, and being able to make adjustable throws on a run is something that's, you know, truly incredible, and it's been amazing, and I'm excited for year two and us building on that.
That's JSN, Seattle Seahawks stud wide receiver, on Sam Darnold. Dirt, are we overlooking Sam Darnold for MVP consideration,
ooh,
given what we talked about with their run game?
Yeah, I mean, you could sell me a flyer on that for sure, that he got the monkey off of his back. He's landed as an established starter in the NFL. The pressure's not there the way that it used to be. He's got a contract for 2 more years, so he's not playing for anything in that regard this season. And, oh, by the way, the guy that we just heard might be the best offensive player in football, and that's a pretty good thing to have on the outside, and it's going to help your numbers look pretty good. You could sell me on that bet. He's got to cut down on the turnovers. You need a few more touchdowns, but in terms of, like, yardage and some of the other markers you're looking for, he's checking those boxes. So if you get about 10 more TDs and a few fewer interceptions, you get to, like, the 35-9 range, then you're in the mix for winning an MVP.
It's Cafe Day Dirt and Spray. We roll on every 7 a.m. segment here on 105.1 The Fan. What is next on the menu?
In an effort to push back on the very fine Bahamian response that is Kalen DeBoer in defeat or in disappointment is out, let me just correct the record for a second, Greeny. Kalen DeBoer is in absolutely no jeopardy of losing his job, for example. Now, is there pressure to perform? Of course. It's Alabama, just like there is at Ohio State for Joey and Oklahoma for Dusty. And I think when you look at Kalen DeBoer, he was offered a blank check by Michigan at the end of last season. He decided to turn that down. Therefore, he got a contract extension at Alabama because of the leverage that he had in that situation. He got his pay raised. He got an extension, a couple extra years. Now it costs $67 million for him to leave. The group is rallying behind Kalen DeBoer. So anyone that suggests that there is not alignment in Tuscaloosa is just flat out wrong.
There's Greg McElroy, SEC Network, on the safety of Kalen DeBoer and his job. Are we buying it? Is he more protected than we think?
I certainly acknowledge the financial component of it. But after seeing what happened at Penn State last year, how could we say there's no chance? Because take yourself back 365 days ago. If I tell you James Franklin's out halfway through the season, your response is what? He was just in the semifinal. It's Penn State. They went to the Big Ten championship game. They damn near beat Notre Dame, who went on to go play for the national championship. Like, no, he's not going to get fired. He might need to win a big game to satisfy you. He's not going to get fired. I don't think Alabama's going to crumble the way Penn State crumbled. That's not the argument I'm making. But college football has taught us we should never say never to the idea of somebody getting turfed, man.
Order up!
No, I mean, I think we'll see. We'll see what, you know, each situation calls for in the game once you get into it. And kind of what our game plan and our approach is going into a game. And then, you know, there's always in-game adjustments. But, no, I don't think as an offense it changes what we're going to be doing from that aspect.
That is Packer quarterback Jordan Love, asked about if he's going to throw more now that the Josh Jacobs thing is kind of sitting in limbo. He's on the commissioner's list. And so they'll be without him, and they're hoping Marshawn Floyd – Lloyd, and company will be able to step up. He doesn't think that their play calling is going to change much with this news.
It'll be really interesting because we've seen teams who lose a feature back and then all of a sudden the numbers do dip, and then other places can showcase that it's more around the play calling and the offense and the offensive line. It seems like, now Packer fan can correct me if I'm wrong here, they're mostly healthy on the outside, which is a good way to go into the season. That has not been the case for them in years past. I imagine as games go on, they might lean a little bit more pass heavy than run heavy. heavy. But their ability to run the football, Jacobs had 929 yards, so not out of this world, but a really efficient, good back with 13 touchdowns. That's not just a simple thing to replace, and it'll be one of the bigger questions for Green Bay this season.
Order up.
I would just say it's kind of embarrassing. I mean, honestly, it's just embarrassing that that's where we are. I don't blame the kids and people trying to take advantage of the system. I just think it's embarrassing where we are with college football. And we've been there for a while, so I just keep my energy, my focus on and my energy on the things that I control and the things that matter, and that's these kids here and our team. But, you know, all that outside stuff, I mean, we just kind of, no pun intended, we just stay in our lane, you know, here at Clemson. Try to. But it's embarrassing. I mean, it really is. You know, we have no rules. There's no governance. I mean, it's a joke. There's zero rules. And when you enforce rules, somebody just goes and finds a judge to say, no, you can't enforce that rule. So never did I think I'd be living in an era like this, but that's where we are.
There's Dabo ahead of his LSU tilt. Says he wants to stay in his lane. No pun intended.
No pun intended.
There's pun intended.
Feels dirty, but I'm going to do it. I'm rooting like hell for him this weekend.
We have Jamarcus Shepherd on at 7. He's dabbling in having guys come back.
Yeah.
Now, they weren't real NFL guys per se the way some of these other players are.
Yeah.
I'm curious what he's made of the noise of this topic.
It's also much quieter to play like Oregon State than it is at LSU.
No doubt.
And also the follow-up report that came out that Lane Kiffin and LSU coaches were some of the guys spearheading this with the players, reaching out directly to them to say, hey, if you get cut, can you come back? Mm-hmm. Not a guy who got cut, was left looking around the room like, what am I going to do with my life? And then a college reaching out and saying, hey, you might have eligibility anymore. I'm rooting like hell for Clemson. It would be the funniest possible start to the college football season, all this buildup, all this, you know, pomp and circumstance for LSU to go down in week one.
Order up.
It just plays right into Justin's, you know, skill set. Now, Justin's skill set is he's just elite at everything that he does. And we all recognize that. I think anybody that knows football recognizes that. I think he's got the most arm talent. I think he's the most accurate. And to be in, you know, Mike's system where it really big plays, yards after catch can be maximized by, you know, making that timing of hitting the receiver right out of the break with a guy that's that accurate. That's I think would be the number one thing that jumps out to me after watching this through training camp and in the offseason.
There's Jim Harbaugh as they get ready for another big season in LA with a new offensive coordinator paired with Justin Herbert, as he thinks this offense is a match made in heaven with Herbert's skill set and McDaniel play-calling ability.
One of the biggest questions of the NFL season. The Chargers have been a really good team over the last 2 years, despite all the injuries. They've been a playoff team in the AFC, and then they crumble when it matters most, and Herbert plays terribly when it matters most. And so is this the guy that could unlock it? Can he take Herbert to another level statistically in the regular season and then put them in a spot to go on a run? It's one of the bigger questions of the season for me.
And finally, Cafe Day Dirt and Spray closes with this.
Order up.
He's got to be more consistent. Like, he could have came out in the NFL draft last year and been a top three pick, but he came back. I think he came back so he can be more consistent. The bad taste in his mouth, the pick six he threw against the Indiana Hoosiers, he needs to be more consistent in the biggest moments, and he can this year. If you think about the weapons that he's got, Evan Stewart, DeCorian Moore, he's going to have two of the top 10 wideouts in America, but consistency is the name of the game for Dante Moore. If he's consistent, Kev, he's got the potential to be the number one pick in the NFL draft. It is a lot of great quarterbacks in college football this year, and Dante Moore is right up there at the top of the list.
There's Booger McFarland. Dante needs to be more consistent in what is obviously a massive year for him individually and a big season for many in Oregon. As, you know, some, I don't think everybody would agree with the statement, but I've seen the takes out there. This is the most talented Oregon team of all time and all that stuff. But they go in with the massive expectations, as does Dante Moore.
Got a lot of stuff he's got to clean up. There's no doubt about it. He showed flashes of being an elite quarterback last year, showed flashes of being overwhelmed, showed flashes of not understanding what defenses were doing, and I think at times had a hard time processing things at the speed that you need to process things at. And so those are the big questions about him coming into this year. I think it was absolutely the right call to come back for one more year. The track record of NFL quarterbacks with fewer than 20 starts at the college level is just atrocious. Guys don't succeed at the next level. So he made the right call. Now it's up to him to see if you can improve on the areas you need to improve on.
We have a lot to get to as we roll on in hour number two. This coach continuing to stand firm in a stance that everybody knows is incorrect, and talk a little bit about the new sale in a major league sport. We'll get to some NFL today and some more college football as well. Dirt and Sprague back with more on 105.1 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. It is 7:28 on Portland Sports Leader 105.1 The Fan. Good morning. Hope your kiddos are all back in school now. Mine don't go back till next week. I feel like I'm like...
Not till next week?
Yeah.
Wow.
They're off all... I think my daughter starts high school Wednesday, and my little one starts elementary school back on Tuesday.
That's pretty wild. Yeah, I feel like everybody else is in.
Starts after Labor Day.
Yeah, we have a three-day
weekend, Labor Day,
by the way.
We do have a three-day weekend.
Underrated, nice.
We got Monday off, man.
Yes, we do.
Great. It'd be great. We used to have to work that day, and no. I used to be like, yo, this is pointless.
New
and
management has sat in that seat on that Monday trying to do a show and understands.
Yeah. You end up doing the same show on the Tuesday that you did on the Monday.
It's a little light on Labor Day Monday.
We have a lot more to get into today. I want to talk about Artie Moreno selling the Angels. Goodbye.
One of the worst owners we've ever seen in professional sports.
Tarps off. They were chanting goodbye Artie yesterday.
Goodbye Artie.
But also the owner that bought the team owns like eight teams. So it's,
yes.
I think he became the first to own like six different leagues now. Am I right on that?
I think six different leagues.
EPL,
is right.
Six different leagues, right? NHL,
MLS,
NBA, NFL.
Yep. NWSL.
Major League Baseball
NBA,
now.
Major League Baseball now, the NFL, and the NBA.
Life's good if you're Stan Kroenke. Life's
so I think
good.
He's got seven or eight.
We could power rank. You know what we could do with that segment? We could also power rank where we think Stan Kroenke's interests are of all the teams he owns.
Ooh.
Because there's one to me that's clearly number one.
Without a doubt.
But I think there's a very close second.
Okay.
And then I'm not really sure how you would categorize the rest of them.
Interesting, yeah.
No doubt about
People
it.
People are not thrilled with him right now financially in Denver.
No, but
I know that.
Several of his teams have won titles in the not-too-distant
yes.
past.
You know what I wish we had here in Portland?
Titles.
Yes.
Titles.
Titles would be cool.
And multiple teams.
Yeah, well, that would be cool, too.
Tease out for titles. So we talked about the weekend that was in college football, week zero. Wasn't a great slate. And one of the big talking points ended up to the football being bad point, the attendance of USC. And we talked about that. Lincoln Riley is stepping to the podium again this week. They're getting ready to host Fresno State. I'm sure the attendance is going to be stellar. And he was asked about the narrative about USC fans not caring as much about the program and where the, you know, the health of the program. He said, quote, "This is USC. People are going to have an opinion. I don't buy into the false narrative. I think that comes from a lot of people that don't follow our program, and most of those have never stepped foot in the Coliseum. We understand the factors that impacted Saturday's attendance. We have high..." Oh, this is the school statement. So they basically acknowledged that the weather and everything involved was pretty terrible. Joey McGuire, yeah. I should have pulled this for the cafe. He was talking about this in a roundabout way at his. He said, "Not to take any shots because I have a lot of respect for USC and Lincoln Riley, but it's really awesome to be playing in Lubbock, Texas, knowing we're going to be playing in front of 60,000 people.
It's going to be hot as balls there, too, I'd imagine.
It's going to be warm. It's going to be every bit as warm as it was Saturday." So Lincoln Riley is not buying in to the false narrative of USC and the health of the program. This led to one Petros Papadakis, longtime LA sports commentator and former USC football player, giving his thoughts on Lincoln Riley and USC.
"Most of USC's modern problems in this era or arena, I think, as far as selling the program, stem from Lincoln Riley, who relates to almost nobody. He never interacts with the fans, ever, never participates in anything, and if he does, it's begrudgingly. He has closed practices, media members, more than one, and you know way more under the table, are constantly threatened with banishment if anything leaks." You remember the story from a couple years ago. "I wasn't surprised to see nobody there because Lincoln Riley has zero connection to the alums, to the fan base, and he doesn't care to. It's obvious. Now, if he had a bad attitude and he was a mean and quiet guy like he is and he didn't want to relate with anybody and he was living in a winning 11 games a year and going to the college football playoff and Caleb Williams wins back-to-back Heismans or something instead of crapping out in his second year at USC, maybe people have a different issue. But they haven't done anything near what they're supposed to do."
Right.
"And he doesn't do anything to sell the program. It's not enough in today's day and age with the competition in town and the competition of how great college football is on TV and how much people like pro football here in town and SoFi and all that. There is no excuse for that crowd. And the crowd was about USC to me.
Petros Papadakis is about as USC in the media as you could possibly be. And I would not categorize him as somebody that is not from there, nor has not stepped foot in the Coliseum, and he is completely contradicting everything Lincoln Riley said.
Yeah, it just is another layer on the Lincoln Riley story, where it's a guy who has had a really hard time owning up to his weakness, his faults, his struggles early at USC. It's always an excuse. It's always pointing the finger at something else, the travel, the depth. We don't have things aligned in the administration, and this was no different, right? Like, in a statement, instead of just being like, man, It's a thing to showcase that we need to be better in order to make this a can't-miss ticket in Los Angeles. That's on us. We need to get more butts in the seats. It's an excuse, and it's all people are just making stuff up. They don't understand it. They've never set foot in Los Angeles. When I heard that yesterday from Petros, honestly, the thought that I had was that was exactly what Chip Kelly was. Now, to the point in the answer and in that rant, when you win games at a high level, nobody cares that you're a D. Nobody cares that you don't give a rip about the alumni. Nobody cares that you don't do anything around the booster events or the, you know, things and events going on campus, because you're winning. And winning at the end of the day is what matters most. But what has happened to Chip Kelly at every other stop that he's made along the way when he hasn't won? He's run his course, and it's been like, dude, screw this guy. Mm-hmm. He doesn't give a rip. He doesn't care about us. He's not involved in anything. And he's not winning. He's going 8-4, 7-5. And so if Lincoln Riley had won 10 or 11 games each of the last 2 years and was a playoff team, nobody would care that he's not involved in campus-related activities. But when you're underwhelming and you were sold as the savior for the program and you've struggled to get to 9 wins each of the last 3 years, 2 of those years not even getting to that number, that's where the fan base is at. And so it kind of reminds me of, you get these weird pockets of fan bases where there's an online community of SC fan that will defend everything and beat their chest and look at our history and things are great, number one recruiting class. And then there's the other side of it, of people who can look at it objectively and honestly and say, this has not been good enough. He has not done enough to captivate the LA sports fan. And if they win this year, that will take care of it, right? If they go to the college football playoff and handle their business in year 5 under Lincoln Riley, a lot of that will be settled. But this is why I think there's that thought of, if you go 8-4 or 7-5 this year, what are we holding on to?
Why would 9-3 not be in it?
I mean, 9-3, I would have it in
five.
It. I just don't know what their finances are behind the scenes and what the payout is for his contract. I agree with you. I just don't know what their situation is behind the scenes.
Well, a lot of programs operate that way, right? We don't understand where they're at financially. We're kind of left guessing. But I would just 8-4, 7-5, I think it's what you said Abraham told you. I don't know why 9-3 wouldn't be in there. And I'd even add, even if, let's say, they make the playoff, they're not winning the Big Ten. Nobody's picking to do that.
No.
Even if they make the playoff, but they lose in the first round, does that do anything for LA sports fan? I'm not. And
it
I know
wouldn't
they have
for me in year five, but yeah.
I'm not really sure it does. They'd be starting with a new quarterback next year. I know he played a little bit in mop-up duty, and they have all these freshmen at skill positions. But
mm-hmm.
LA is a title city. That's when they want to show up. They want to show up when it's the real deal, man.
Yes.
Like, Rams fans can get made fun of for selling out their regular season games. And certain teams can come to L.A. and still have a good portion or a good showing of their fan base. But when it's playoff time, there's a lot of blue and gold there. So I just Dodgers fans, right? Like, they will show out absolutely when that team is in the running, which they have been.
Yes.
I don't know. It is starting. I dismissed the idea of it when it happened. And I would just say I've come around to the being, like, bad take by me. I agree with the opinion of Jonathan going to Michigan State. This smells weird. It's not a good fit. And I'm like, you know, I get it, but he's a good coach and yada, yada, yada. 2 years later, he's fired. I don't know what the season will hold for USC or how good or bad they will be. What I would just say is it has a real stench of the same stuff. This is becoming it's year five, and we're here saying, like, yeah, 9-3 saves his job. I'm like, no playoffs and a 9-3 season in year five is cool for USC?
9-3 is not good enough to get to the college playoff.
That's a joke. I don't care what your schedule is. Go win games. It's year five.
You're
you
USC, dude. You're not Purdue complaining about a hard schedule. You're USC.
Indiana,
with Lincoln Riley.
Indiana came in and said, year one, we're winning 10. Year two, we're winning the Natty.
Yes.
Like, they're not making excuses.
No.
So I don't know. To me, it just smells like this is coming to an end, and I could be way wrong, and he's there for five more years.
Talk about underrated games this weekend, man. Fresno's not going to beat him, but can they make that game uncomfortable Friday night?
I'm not putting much stock into it, but to me, it's more like, can you beat Oregon? Can you beat Ohio State? Can you beat those teams?
You have to win one of those. They play all three of the big boys. They get Oregon and Ohio State at home, and they go on the road to Indiana. If you lose to all three of them again...
What's his road situation been like? I don't ever feel like he wins really good road games, and then he loses bad ones. Too.
They're going to Indiana in the middle of November. Have fun with that game. At the end of the season, if you're in year five and you're at USC and you can't beat one of the three big teams in the Big Ten, what are we doing here? You're just James Franklin in Southern California, but probably losing a game along the way also that you shouldn't lose.
I'm almost left like wondering, because I'm of the opinion that like if it is 9-3 or worse, I wouldn't be shocked if they fired him. I know the recruiting class is great and all that.
Jen Cohen was not the AD that hired him. She hired DeBoer at Washington and then bolted for L.A.
But that's not even her call. That's donors calling and saying, we got the money, make it happen.
Yeah.
And they move on from a guy who's kind of a jackass to them. To me, I almost look at the landscape and go, where would he land? Because he's absolutely going to get scooped up.
Somebody will grab him, for sure.
He'll be a head coach somewhere, and maybe it makes more sense. But I just think it highlights the dysfunction – the kind of vibes around the program. Like, they need this season to be 10 plus wins, and to look all the hype has to be showing itself.
Right.
You have to feel great about all the returning talent. Like, if it's not, and it's a struggle to get to 8 to 9 wins. Yeah, man. That's one of the lead voices of the program represented in the media.
Yes.
This is not, well, these people with their false narratives. That guy's as plugged into the institution as you can possibly be, and he's like, this is terrible.
It's not Dirt in Portland, Oregon, who hates USC, you know, ragging on them for not having attendance. That's a little bit different.
Right.
If you want to throw that out, I totally get it. That's Petros, who's been involved with them for a long time. The story of his time at USC has been a guy who has been too late to the punch. Recruiting didn't take it seriously enough. Congrats on the number one recruiting class. It came in year four.
Yeah.
After year four.
Yep.
Defense, we didn't take it seriously. We brought Alex Grinch. What did everybody say when you brought Alex Grinch? He was terrible at Oklahoma. Why are you bringing him with you? What sucked
was not good
the first couple of years?
Right.
Okay, now I'm going to take defense seriously. It took you until year four to take defense seriously. Everything has been late to the punch, and it might end up dooming his career Southern California.
What? He had Lynn as his DC, who then leaves to go to a different job.
He's at Penn State. He went back to his alma mater.
We just interviewed Don Fisher, and I'm like, is it shocking he didn't lose his coordinators at Indiana? And he's like, no, they love him. And I'm like, they might keep their coordinators forever. They might just be cool. Let's win a couple titles together.
Could be the next Brent Venables situation where eventually he jumped, but for a long time it's like, nah, I'm just cool being a DC.
Good stuff there from Petros as Lincoln says it's this false narrative about USC. It's like, get real, dude. Come on. That was embarrassingly
bad. I hope Fresno puts a scare in him on Friday night.
They play Friday night, correct?
Friday night, Fresno.
What are we to say if their attendance doesn't change?
Is it still the weather? Now it's a weeknight. Now it's the traffic. it takes too long to get there.
That might be the next one. All right, we have a lot more to get into. This team gets sold by a guy with a great track record, but not necessarily always loved, and one of the worst owners in all of sports is officially out. We'll get to that coming up next on The Fan. Happy Pumpkin Spice Latte Day, everybody. Hope you've had your PSLs already.
No. That time of year, man.
I got one yesterday.
We got a pumpkin on the front porch.
No.
We have a pumpkin on the front porch.
Don't fight it, Swag.
Don't
Lean
fight
in,
it,
baby.
Embrace it.
You know
give me some Christmas music, man.
You know, I put in my my oatmeal this morning, put a little vanilla protein, and I sprinkled some pumpkin spice on top of it.
Yeah, buddy.
It was so good.
Yeah, a little apple cider.
A little cold brew with a little pumpkin cold
cream. You know what I'm going to go
do
in the rain? I'm going to go get something to grill on the barbecue. Get some ribs or something.
Standing out in the rain.
Damn it.
You can do that, and then you can also enjoy an iced pumpkin spice latte.
Yes, they're delightful.
Put your sweatpants on, man.
Feel good.
You know you're getting back to that life soon
anyway.
Put
your feet up on the couch. Look outside the window. It's raining. You don't feel like there's any pressure to go outside.
Ooh.
It's banging against the window.
Maybe I'll go play Quick Nine in the rain.
You know what's opening up this weekend?
I refuse. What?
The pumpkin patches.
Pumpkin patches. It's that time of year.
You don't want an elephant ear? No churros for Jason?
No.
Who doesn't love an elephant ear?
I still got baseball games this weekend.
Yeah, baseball season's over.
Can I tell you something I forgot to mention? When I went to San Diego, I went to the zoo, and we saw a guy at the front, and we, you know, me and my brother-in-law are like, dude, this is a massive zoo. So we're asking him, like, where stuff is. And I go, I'm assuming you guys have your elephant ears by the elephant enclosure. And he goes,
they don't have elephants?
What's an elephant ear?
What?
And I went, What?
Excuse me?
He had no idea what an elephant ear was.
How was that possible?
No.
Did you not see any for sale at the zoo?
Didn't see one.
Really?
Didn't see one.
Did they just call not him something else, but it's a similar fried dough, cinnamon sugar?
He goes, what are you talking about? It's an elephant ear. And I was like, you know, a big piece of fried dough and cinnamon sugar. You see him at fairs. And he goes, oh. And he didn't call it anything. He just went, I actually don't know where they sell those. Mm. And he'd been at the zoo for a long time.
I don't think he knew what you were talking about.
I don't think
he just had the embarrassment of, I want to pretend that I do know what you're talking about.
Oh, mud on the boots, an elephant ear, my hands being a little cold. We're here, Jason.
It's that time of year.
Embrace it. Go get yourself a PSL.
When are the Halloween decorations going up at the Sprague household?
Some would argue some are already up.
Ooh, are they already there?
Watched Child's Play 2 yesterday.
You got a couple of skulls up in the living room already?
Child's Play 2, like... underrated bad.
It's so bad.
Like, it's bad, but like, it's even worse than you remember.
Yeah, age is even worse than you thought imaginable.
I forgot how they killed Chucky the second time, and that was hilarious.
Those movies were never scary.
No.
Never.
It's always funny when they're showing, like, the plastic doll. Ha ha, come here, kid. And then they do the chase scene,
and you can tell
it's a little person running with a red wig.
Just grab it. Rip it. Pull the head off.
Well, they put a hose in his mouth and solves the problem.
That took care of that.
We had a sale in sports, third hour right around the corner. The Artie Moreno Angels are no more. He is going to still own a minority stake, but he has sold the controlling interest of the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, formerly known as the Anaheim Angels, formerly known as the LA Angels, formerly known as the California Angels. And Stan Kroenke, who owns the Rams, the Nuggets, the Avalanche, Arsenal in the EPL, and the Rapids as well. He has bought the team for a $4 billion valuation. He's got a championship with the Rams. The Nuggets, Avalanche, and Arsenal won the table last year in the EPL, so he's got multiple championships on his resume. He's not well-beloved, obviously, in St. Louis for what he did with the Rams.
No.
Nor does he give an S, but he's coming in with title experience. And the Angels are finally out of the grips of one Artie Moreno, who tried to sell the team in 2022 and then rescinded the offers or rescinded the opportunity to buy the team.
Right.
They have been chanting fire or sell the team to Artie Moreno for years. And so we've got new ownership down in Anaheim.
Such a weird situation, because usually when you're looking at incompetent organizations who can't do anything, one of the hallmarks of that is you can't find good players, nor are you willing to pay good players. That's not been the case with the Angels. They have not won a playoff game since 2009. During that time, you can argue they had back-to-back faces of baseball, like Mike Trout and the run he went on early in that tenure in Anaheim, then followed up by the new Babe Ruth, who was the headline star for them for a number of years. They spent money on Albert Pujols. They spent money on Anthony Rendon. Like, it wasn't that was not their problem. And yet, no matter what they did, it did not work. Every managerial hire that he made did not work. It just it's a remarkable run of incompetency and falling short of expectations. And if I were an Angel fan, I would be dancing in the street right now. How are you not celebrating that guy being gone? When you have not had a winning season in 11 years, and you have not won a playoff game in baseball since 2009, the format the last handful of years has expanded access to the postseason in a way that we have never seen before. It has never been easier to make the playoffs. The Mariners are 10 games below 500 and still in the mix in the final month of the season to make the postseason, because that's how bad their division is this year. The Angels also play in that division. They just happen to be 30 games below 500, so I'll be curious to see if this could be the thing that turns the Angels around. I think it's too late for Mike Trout's career, unfortunately. But it's remarkable how bad they've been, and everything they've tried has absolutely failed.
Yeah, there's a lot you can go with. By the way, I shorted him on titles. The Rapids won a title. He owns a lacrosse team that won a title. Like, the dude has done nothing but win championships.
He's got to be the most prolific sports owner now, right? I mean, it's hard to say off the top of our head. Like, is there anybody that even comes to mind?
It depends how you categorize, like, championships in, like, six different
I just mean,
leagues.
Like, having that many, like, who has that big of a portfolio? Does anybody else have that big of a portfolio of teams?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Can't be, right?
Not across that many different
teams. He's in, like, literally every league.
He's in every league.
I mean, other than, like, you know,
the Steinbrenners.
Well, what's more impressive to you guys, winning, like, six different championships in six different leagues, or, like, I know we make fun of, like, Jerry Jones had three Super Bowls in 4 years.
He did, and he built a lot of that himself with decisions that everybody laughed at the time.
Controversial, hot decisions.
Jimmy Johnson, the trading of Herschel Walker, like, it.
Well, but he was also able to, the way you can in baseball, just outspend everybody else, and he stacks rosters. That was what brought a salary cap into the NFL.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mike Trout gave comments. We played one in the cafe. Like, I appreciate Mike Trout. He's a great baseball player. I think we are going to largely not give him the credit due, and I've been saying this for a long time, because he chose to stay with an irrelevant franchise in an irrelevant city. I kind of am like, dude, really? He's coming out, and he's like, I felt like it was time for new. And I'm like, why are you staying here? Like, you've known this ownership sucks.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Why doesn't he go back to the Phillies?
This is not, like, he can live wherever he wants to live, and he made his own decision. He made a lot of money. But, like, there's a part of me as a sports fan that sees these quotes, and I'm like, no offense, dude. This is why you're going to kind of be forgotten. Not, like, totally, because, you know, it's baseball and you're an all-time great player. But, like, in the conversation of some of the dudes, you're not going to be brought up as much as you should.
You've not thought about Mike Trout in a long time.
Yeah. I think it's okay and normal to say that. And some of that is deciding to stay. Tim Kirkshen said that Artie Moreno refused to trade Shohei Ohtani and then didn't come to Shohei Ohtani with a real serious offer. And I'm like,
that's good ownership.
How can you not come to a real serious offer with one guy who's almost a $1 billion economy?
Japanese Babe Ruth is the only thing putting butts in your seats, and let's not give him a serious offer. That's a good owner.
Real quick, who would we categorize as the best sports owner? That's an interesting title to noodle on, because it might be him. Dude, he's got a title in the English Premier League.
It's hard to think of anybody
and like
better than
four
that.
Other American leagues.
Yeah. I mean, there's some people who maybe are more successful with their individual organization or with one organization, but to have that,
like, you can
well-rounded
say,
of a portfolio of winning, that's wild.
Like, he's fell incredibly short of having more than just one in Denver with the Nuggets, but the Rams might be on their quest for a second. He's doing anything and everything to do. Like, that's what people don't like about him is...
How many has he won with the Avalanche? He's won at least two, maybe three since he bought it.
I don't know. What year did he buy the Avalanche? Do you remember?
I can't remember.
He's got three. He bought them that long ago?
I don't. I think it's just the
last
two.
I know McKinnon has the one, right? Mm. Or does he have two?
McKinnon only has one.
Yeah, I thought the Avalanche only won the one.
I'll see when they bought him.
But yeah, I mean, who is the best sports owner?
2000, he took over the Nuggets and the Avalanche. Did they win? Have they won three titles?
They probably won one.
They've won three.
Yeah.
The first one they won with Bork in his last year. They got him.
It was them or the Red Wings there for a while.
96 season, 2001 season.
So there's one.
And 2022. So he's
got two.
He's got two cups.
Two Stanley Cups. So I just.
He's got to be the best.
He has to kind
of
actively
be
the best
guys,
owner,
like,
right?
If he. It wouldn't have happened because we're obviously an NBA team and he owns the Nuggets. But, like, of all the guys, if you would have found out he bought the Blazers, sans a. Like, just the richest man on the planet.
Mark Cuban.
Right. Like, this would have been the highest of celebrations in Portland if
no
he had bought the team.
Well, also, he took a team from St. Louis, so I'd be a little worried to actually take us from Portland.
Maybe he'll put an NBA team back in St. Louis. Yeah. There you go.
Repay
your favor. Sorry, St. Louis.
Who is the best owner in all of sports? Dan Kroenke is dabbling now in Major League Baseball, buying the Angels for a $4 billion valuation. We have Statter Story in the final hour. Loaded third hour as well. Dirt and Sprague back with more on Portland Sports Leader 105.1 The Fan.